Coming to you from the Walt Disney World Swan and Dolphin Hotels, it's the Lotosphere 2006 edition of Taking Notes. Here are your hosts, Bruce Elgort and Julian Robichaud.
Everyone, this is Bruce Elgort here for the Taking Notes podcast. This is episode 13 for Wednesday, January 25th, 2006. Julian and I had the opportunity yesterday to sit down with Kevin Cavanaugh, who is the Vice President of Development for IBM Lotus Domino Products. Kevin was extremely friendly and gave us some fantastic information on things like new SameTime 7.5 features, including plugins, Activity Explorer integration, InNotes, the difference between Hanover and Domino Next, new and improved Notes client stuff on the Mac, upcoming RSS and Atom feed integration and notes, and much more. I'd like to again thank Kevin for the time he gave us for the interview, and also Mike Shamrell and Jen Snyder, who made this possible and set everything up. So enjoy the interview with Kevin, and we'll be speaking to you soon.
Okay, so try to do a little internet research. Look like you, I guess you were at Yale. Did some arts things, then architecture at MIT, then suddenly overseas for a while.
Well, so I'm one of these weird people who, you know, was trained as an architect, but I went to architecture school at MIT, and so MIT was a good place to be captured by the computer business.
Yeah.
And I was in architecture school for about 2 or 3 weeks, took a programming class just because I figured I had to learn how to, you know, write Fortran programs. And sort of thought it was interesting, went home, read the book over the weekend, and, you know, started writing programs I wasn't supposed to be able to write. And so the guy who was teaching the class said to me, there's this guy, Nick Negroponte, Nick was just sort of recently made a professor at that point. And so he said, Nick needs to hire somebody to do some programming, and he'd love to have somebody in the architecture program because they are what was then the architecture machine group was a function of the architecture school.
Okay.
And, you know, he was pulling in people from the computer science department mostly. So, you know, I became kind of one of a handful of nominal architects actually in the architecture machine group. And so we did all sorts of cool CAD stuff. And I vividly remember taking some people from around from some university in Ohio. One of my jobs was to, you know, sort of, you know, bring around the visiting dignitaries. And them saying, what a waste. I can't believe what you guys are doing. Everybody has their own 32-bit machine. They're connected on a shared bus read network. And they're using displayless terminals. And you have this raster terminal that's in color in the corner. And no one will ever have those things on their individual desktop. And this was
crazy talk.
This was in 1974.
So ARPANET cables all over the wall.
Yeah, and so, you know, little did I know, actually, as the kind of guy who had sort of grown up with urban planning as my thing, that, you know, I was in a place where I was starting to see what the computing environment was for 10 or 20 years in the future. And so when I got out of graduate school, I went and worked as an architect for a short period of time, but I was down in Texas. And somebody at Rice was looking to staff up a research position, and they called MIT, and, you know, they eventually found me. And so I worked at a research group at Rice and taught quantitative methods for architects in the architecture school for
complex.
5 or 6 years. It isn't all that complex, frankly. You know, architects tend not to be all that mathematical. And so we did a little bit of, you know, this is the way statistics work, and this is, you know, the way you write some programs, and so forth and so on.
And now, of course, the architecture you do is just...
Well, and the other thing is, you know, we had CAD systems and,
yeah.
And stuff,
true.
Early
yeah.
computer vision systems that we had in the lab. And so during that time, you know, Nick expanded his focus and it became Media Lab. And you know, I decided after, you know, a couple of years in research, and my wife was going to go to law school, to graduate school, that it was really time to jump into the industry, because there was actually with the exception of a few places like MIT, there was better technology in the industry than there was in academia.
Right.
And so I worked in the CAD-CAM business. I worked in the electronic publishing business.
Does the fact that Jason Alexander, who aspires to be an architect, have anything to do with his being at the Lotusphere?
No. I never know who's going on stage.
No, I just wanted to make that correlation.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that I can't clutter my mind with even trying to figure out who's going to be there. So I'm always surprised.
Right. It's all connected.
So I've been at Lotus since 1990. And while I was at Rice, I did a fair amount of software development for some overseas organizations. And shut this up so people stop hanging me. When I went to work in the industry, I worked as a consulting engineer in the CAD business, doing lots of international things. And eventually, in another kind of bizarre twist, I had this mentor who said, you ought to do some selling. You don't really want to be an executive. You ought to understand what it's like to sell. And so he convinced me to be the account manager for our distributor in Japan, and I ran the distributor network in Korea and China and Taiwan, and then eventually became the Japanese country manager for that company.
Really?
About a year. And so once doing that, I've never been able to shake the international stuff. I'm still the sort of non-Japanese executive who deals with Japan around Lotus. So.
Uh-huh. Well, now, and then I guess is it maybe a lead into the same time, since I know that's the first thing you got. Meet the developers. So you're kind of in charge of this big development team.
Well, so meet the developers is to me one of the really fun things to do at Lotus here. And I kind of inherited that 3 or 4 years ago when Steve Beckhardt left. And I get a kick out of it. I enjoy doing it. And, one, it's fun to get the developers up on stage to do those things. Mm-hmm. And two, you can always get a temperature of sort of how Lotusphere's gone by that organization. And people are, reasonably polite and reasonably generous. And you can joke around with them a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite sessions.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And it's packed every year.
Well, and it's also, for those of us who, sort of start to lose our voice, I'm a day ahead this year.
I have a session Thursday morning. I can't lose my voice.
Usually the voice goes around Wednesday night, but I think I'm at least a day ahead. And so it's also, you're done when the ask the developer session is over.
Well, now, one of the questions I remember from last year that got just all sorts of applause was same time, quick place. I think you kind of the question of how come they're IBM, there's very long names. Why can't they just be same time and quick place again? You actually, I think, fielded that question with, we'll bring that back.
Yeah, well, so we've been having a conversation with the marketing team who, with good intentions, went to some, marketing principle of descriptive names, but sort of nobody
sushi, told us, cold dead fish.
Right? Yeah, right. Nobody told us that the descriptive names were going to be all 8 words long. And
I think the names the way they are now, which were the old ones, are that move. I mean, the question that Julian asked, I think it the names are better at same time and quick play. So.
Yeah. So I have a lot of the marketing guys do a lot of research and. In general, they're right, and every once in a while, just like we do in engineering, you get not the greatest idea. And so I think, people responded quickly and fixed that problem, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so then same time 7-5.
Yeah, same time 7-5. It was it looks like a fabulous piece of work. We had a couple questions about it, and I think some other people fed us some of these questions. So.
Okay.
You want to take the first one?
I had no idea same time 7-5 was such a big deal. I mean, that was the big surprise for me in the opening session.
We kind of somewhat intentionally kept it quiet.
Really? And it's fantastic. I mean, just the screenshots and everything. I guess what they said, AOL, Yahoo, Google Talk.
Right.
Those are the three. We were kind of wondering, as far as the voice piece, someone mentioned something about using the Skype codec. Is there any interoperability on the voice side?
And is it peer-to-peer, or is it muxed, you know, through the same thing?
Yeah, so actually, frankly, I'm not the expert
you don't
on,
know?
On the voice
and
stuff.
That's fine.
I don't really know. I shouldn't give you something that's wrong.
Okay.
Go find
answer.
David Marshak or... go find David Marshak.
Yeah, I know David, so we can do that. What about the Mac client?
So I know a lot about the Mac client.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there we go.
I'm a big proponent of the Mac. I use Notes. Was it 6.05? Is that the version that's out there now for the Mac?
Well, there's a 6.5.
Okay, 6.5. And I think it's wonderful that you guys are making all the changes to better support the Mac client. When are we going to see that client approximately?
Well, with 7.02. So 7.02 is in Q3.
Okay.
And so we've been saying 7.02 all along, but it's kind of gotten better as we've worked on it because, you know, we said if we're going to do this, we're going to go make it look like Tiger. If we're going to do this, we're going to get into the messaging working. We're going to make it a first-class experience. Mm-hmm.
I guess a lot of people always ask, you know, why Domino Design or Domino Administrator never make it to the Mac. Is there that much... how would you say it, work that would need to be done in order to get it to those platforms, being that the client runs on OS X, OS 10?
Yeah, so I'm in the mode of celebrating where we are.
Okay, that's fair.
And, you know, I feel like over the last 3 years, you know, sort of 3 years ago, I was comparatively new in the Notes of Domino job, and when I... you know, did the strategy session or talked to people, you know, sort of, I got the glare of, why aren't you doing more on the Mac? I told people my ambition was in a couple of years to have the Mac people smile at me. And I feel like we're just about there. And the real demand on the Mac is
client.
It is on the client.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, since Designer and the admin client run within the basic client, it's not like it should be a tremendous amount of work, but there are controls that exist
QA.
Only in that, and it's a QA effort, and the demand is sort of relatively light.
Well, and in terms of the changes, to get it to that real first-class client, was that just a really large change that had to be made, or just so many little ones that it took a long
it's
time?
It's just little ones, and you know, we wanted to focus 7 on being a server release.
Yeah.
And we wanted to push scalability and performance, and so that meant we had to sort of marshal the resources on those things. And I'm happy with that because we got to where we wanted to go on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, all right, we can do the Mac sort of a little bit out of sync, and you know, the trade-off is, we'll do it a little out of sync, it'll be a little bit late, but we'll catch it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we'll work on keeping it there. So, I don't know if you were at the session that Penny Sharfman and I did, but at the end of that session, you know, I actually interrupted Penny with the summary and said, by the way, here's Hanover running on the Mac. Because I wanted to get across the point that, so we're running on the Mac now, we're not going to look back and think about it. Now, the fact is, we're going to be a little late with Hanover on the Mac compared to Windows, because there's Eclipse stuff that isn't quite as mature on the Mac.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Apple has a very capable Eclipse team. We work with them, but we're going to have to do some additional work with them. So we'll probably be in beta on the Mac for Hanover at about the time we ship.
So there still is a tremendous amount of work, even, you know, using the Eclipse framework on these various platforms. There still is a lot of things that may, you know, need to come up to speed on, say, OS X or a Linux distribution or something.
Well, so I think Eclipse on Windows and Linux is sort of farther along because Eclipse was originally a developer thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they thought Windows and Linux. And so Apple's been engaging to try to bring that Macintosh stuff along.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do fine. I mean, it's sort of the little things that we worry about because it's end-user software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we have to have fit and finish that's better than if you're working with developers. So,
And you know, I've heard two different kind of new versions coming out. Okay, so we hear Hanover,
right?
Hearing that, and then Domino Next was in the opening session. Is that the same thing?
Well, I think, you know, we could have been maybe a little clearer in naming there. We're going to always do a Domino release with a client release because there are things, there are features we're going to put in the client that we want to provide, you know, high quality server support for. And so we'll sync up a Domino release. We were also, though, trying to project that we have ambitions for Domino to take on some of the characteristics of the portal technology, be able to set up portal capabilities as a Domino administrator.
Right.
And so we'll get some of that stuff into the Hanover release, and you know, more of that may come, you know, later in other Domino releases.
Okay.
So I think Domino Next is maybe a more expansive conceptual term, maybe beyond one release.
Which, I mean, hey, I'm glad to hear it. The more releases you plan out, the better.
Well, and so we're at, we've, one of the things I was keen to do in this job was to get on a manageable pace of releases and say, every year at 18 months, we're going to do a release.
Yeah.
And
which you have been doing. Yeah.
Right, right. And yeah. So, I mean, actually, at the time, everybody said, oh, you know, releases are 3 years. And 3 years is just too long.
That's when your enterprise agreement with Microsoft expires and you don't get new code.
Yeah, right. And so actually, Microsoft has now fallen onto the 3 year or 4 year or God knows,
who knows, yeah,
how many years releases on Exchange. And it seems to me that if we're going to keep up, we need to be thinking about a development process that gets us stuff every 12 to 18 months. You know, one cycle maybe 12 months, another cycle 18 months. And the fact of the matter is we've learned how to work on two releases at once. So we started seven.
Yeah.
As soon as we finished six, and we had part of the team off working on the long pole items for seven, while we had another segment of the team working on 6.5.
Really? Wow.
And it was hard to do. On the other hand, since one of the reasons we had this sort of client and server focus is that we could get the client guys working on 6.5 and the server guys working on 7.
That makes sense.
And, you know, not disrupt each other.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit of that, and it's, you know, sort of the executive mode is always to think that you can do multiple things at once. You know, the reality on the engineering side is that you need a degree of focus, and I think we've learned to walk that line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, with Hanover, you know, we're going to try to balance that same client-server work and not destabilize the server, but, you know, wrap some things around it. So
I had one more Mac question that just came to mind. You know, Steve and company introduced the Intel-based Macs.
Yes.
Right, and they're the old binaries are going to be emulated. Oh, well, there'll be an abstraction layer called Rosetta.
Yep.
I guess the OS X Mac client will run on Rosetta. You guys aren't going to build a native.
No, we are going to build a single binary.
Okay.
We're just running on Rosetta now.
Okay.
It took us a little bit of time to get the Intel machines.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the early stage, we ran in the single binary mode, and we crashed just as equally on power as on Mac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we brought the power stuff along, and we're pleased to see it ran nicely in Rosetta. And now we're going to push to get it as a single binary.
Okay. Are you involved with Activity Explorer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's mine.
One thing that I guess I haven't been to any of the labs yet, but all the referential information for all the things that are going on inside Activity Explorer, are they going to be like stored in some type of, you know, data repository, a Notes database, a DB2 database? Has that been determined yet? Or?
Yeah. So. You know, I think one of the things that I'm actually delighted with the team is that we went from the initial Activity Explorer thing, which was a kind of walled garden idea, to pushing the envelope to say, let's make it really open. And as part of making it really open, they also said, so let's deploy it and use it internally while we're developing it. which is something I think that we've learned from the Notes and Domino development team, that you can't have a waterfall development model. You've got to keep stabilizing the code on a regular basis, and the only way to know whether you're really doing that is have the development team and their buddies using it all the time. So they have an activity server up in Westford. They're scheduling their work using it and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so, they're refining the design as they go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the current plan is metadata will go into a relational database.
Okay.
And that will run on a Java infrastructure. And the content will stay where the content is,
right. Except
in the case where the content is in a private place, like your email,
mm-hmm. And okay. You
want to explicitly say, here's my private email, I now want to share it with my team. So then I'll change the repository because
okay.
I'm not going to give my whole team access to my mail file.
Yeah. Right.
So,
I never thought of that.
So, I've told the team, it's okay if you have to be online for activities to begin with, and then we'll evolve the offline model. And we're going to use things like notes URLs and know about how to be offline.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you have a class of data in activities that knows about being offline, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the innovations that I'm happy with is they've said, so I can use an Atom feed to get activities out to people. So to the extent I can take the Atom feed offline, I can get that indexing of the metadata down offline as well.
Wow.
So, it's a really cool design, and I don't know whether you guys know Scott Prager. Scott's the distinguished engineer who's been leading that effort. Scott came to us years ago with the Edge acquisition. He's done enterprise integration stuff and other things. And so we've had a real focus on activities is cool if we can make it extensible by our partners. Because if we really believe what we're saying is we think this is transformative as a collaboration model, then we need to be looking at having partners extending it and pushing the envelope of what you can do with activities. And we have our own kind of internal partners because IBM Research has been sort of pushing this agenda for some time, and they did the original Activity Explorer prototypes.
Mm-hmm.
And so one other reason to have it open is we want the research guys to use our infrastructure because we know we can put together a scalable infrastructure. And, that isn't what they worry about. They worry about the conceptual stuff.
Yeah.
And so if they use our infrastructure, it ups the probability we can take some new concept that they have and get it into the product faster.
During the
OTS.
That's why that acronym was coined. We saw something with tagging. I don't recall what it was, but we saw someone was tagging like data somewhere. Was it?
Well, this was part of the activities concept.
Okay.
What we've been looking at is things like Delicious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And saying, look, tagging's becoming a standard thing.
And it seems to work.
And so what we're saying is, so you ought to be able to arrange things in an activity tree,
uh-huh. But
you also ought to be able to tag them as well. So, find me the activities that have to do with approvals. And so, tag all the approvals or tag all the content documents or, whatever.
Yeah, and make it easy to tag.
And so the other breakthrough was to say, look, we want to do activities in Hanover. We want it to be an attribute of Hanover.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I was pushing them Hanover. They came back and said, it ought to work in a browser. It ought to work in 6.5. It ought to work in 7. It ought to work in Word. And so they devised a plugin architecture so that you'll have a plugin for your browser. So if I'm browsing online and I see something I want to share with my team, I can, go click on my activity plugin and it'll put it in the activity infrastructure. Or I have a Word document that I, because maybe I have a contributor to the activity that doesn't know about notes or doesn't know about whatever and they're writing documents in Word. They ought to be able to get those in and use it as a way of sharing.
Well, and then with feeds, I guess, I think maybe you said something or I read something about maybe some feeds being more native in notes?
Coming? Well, so off the topic of activities, a shop.
Uh-huh.
There are two things that we want to do with notes. One, lots of people know how to use Domino to create RSS feeds,
mm-hmm.
but we'd like to give a standard implementation.
Yeah, that would be nice.
The 7 mode, and then do a better implementation with HANA. So we're going to get something out in 7.02.
Great.
And
that's notes, not even, I mean, all Hanover aside.
Well, and notes, I don't know whether it'll turn out to be, we do, you know, a set of Domino templates
mm-hmm.
or what. We'll pick something.
Mm-hmm.
But at a minimum, we'll express what we think the most performant way of doing it is. And then, you know, people will do their own things on top. And then we'll, you know, take the longer poll view around Hanover and try to do that. So the sense is corporate guys are going to start to want RSS, so we got to get ahead of them.
Yeah.
And the same way with blogs. I mean, everybody, as you guys well know,
mm-hmm.
People have figured out how to write blogs within Domino, and it works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we want to find a way to support blogs so that we have a blog template that corporate people who are afraid of blogs can put them up and make them usable.
Isn't that the big red easy button? That was easy.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, we see people within IBM who you'd never think would be bloggers, at least blogging internally.
Mm-hmm.
And so that seems like a reasonable model in other companies. And I think we've seen IBM pick up instant messaging and do things, and I'm sort of wrapping back on saying that, doing things with instant messaging that other people don't do. And so you go out to corporations and they say, I'm not going to do instant messaging, that's what my teenagers do. And it's just a distraction for people. And we say, well, at IBM we wouldn't close the books every quarter if we didn't have instant messaging because, you know, people find each other at weird hours of the day and it accelerates our financial processes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have developed through research and the CIO's office all these social networking things that run on the IM transport, which are the class of things that we're exposing in same time 7.5, and, you know, we'll get exposed beyond that in the 7.5 world. And so those things are really useful too. If you have somebody who says, you know, I'm in, I don't know, South America, and I'm looking for someone who's experienced in, you know, configuring this new version of Linux, why shouldn't they be able to broadcast to all the Linux geeks in the company and get an answer from people who maybe have signed up as interested in that area? And, you know, they'll find some guy up at 2 in the morning in Europe or something answer their question.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, and we have same type of work, you know, whatever is kind of built into the 6.5 client.
Yeah.
And it's going to be so nice in 7.5 that you can kind of live in same time.
Right.
Because I have to keep going back and forth right now. You know, I'll type a message, I can send a URL, but then, okay, well, let me send that file to you in an email.
Right.
And it's just, there's so much back and forth, and now it seems like that's sort of your new email.
Well, the other thing that's, you know, we maybe weren't completely clear about. So since the 7.5 client is built on that same Eclipse client architecture. If I develop a plugin for SameTime 7.5, it'll run in Hanover.
Really?
So, you know, if I'm a business partner and I decide I have this new idea about social networking and I'm going to develop this sort of IM-based application, I can go start to sell it to people in SameTime 7.5, and when they get Hanover, I can take that same thing and have it run in Hanover. So that it also means for us that we don't have to worry about having one implementation at the same time in the Connect client and another one in Hanover.
Right.
Same features will run in both places. So, you know, that actually saves us money, but also, you know, makes it better for the customers.
Well, and right now, I guess, the same time client is very light, you know, very small component. With the Eclipse-based same time 7.5, does that suddenly mean that I've got this giant Eclipse install,
it's maybe it a little minimal? Bit. It's maybe a little bit bigger, but Eclipse isn't that big, frankly. And you know, our client work, I just inherited responsibility for the pervasive team, and so we've been putting this client stack on small devices. And so there's the OSGI framework that sort of defines the functions at various devices. So we'll create a definition of the client to run under the same time 7.5, and it'll be a smaller definition than what runs under Hanover.
Okay.
So, you know, if I develop to same time 7.5, I'll be able to run under Hanover. If I develop for Hanover but use services that aren't at same time 7.5, then I might have a problem. So we're going to figure out,
Right.
you know, the services we have to expose and make a trade-off between that and the footprint of the client.
Mail, one, the last thing I wanted to ask, different subject, mail recall. We kind of heard that as one of the big...
Yeah, so people have been asking for this for years, and I guess we've been more worried about it because you can't guarantee 100% you can recall the mail.
Yeah.
You know, one, you don't know that the person didn't read it immediately when you sent it. And with the offline capabilities of Notes, which are both better and more used than other mail systems, you don't know whether the guy was just replicating his mail when you sent the thing out, and he's in the process of reading it on an airplane, and, you know, that message that you wish you hadn't sent, you know, the guy's stewing for 6 hours on the plane with it, and you have the illusion that you've recalled it. And so we've been worried about that as a scenario, and we finally reached the point where we said, look, people want this. It will be useful in some percentage of the cases, and we just need to be explicit to people that when they recall a mail, they... You know,
no guarantees.
Yeah, right.
And
we'll recall
people,
it if we can.
Right, and I think people are very willing to, you know, I think people understand that. I worked for, several years ago, the company I worked for, our mail system was on the mainframe. And so we all just kind of went through the mainframe, and it was just one gigantic single store database.
Yeah, it's easy in a frame.
Right.
Frame.
And so you did that, but yeah, if someone already read the message, you know, no matter, we all knew that you could delete the mail. However, if someone already read it, they've already read it.
So my recommendation to people who worry about that is you get yourself a local mail file. Okay. You set up scheduled replication every 15 minutes, and on average, you know, you get whatever, 7.5 minutes to rethink your think whether you should have pushed the send button or not. And you know, sometimes it's like the bus coming, right? Sometimes you're going to arrive just as the bus comes and the mail's going to get on it and whatever. Sometimes you're going to have 15 minutes to think, oh god, I shouldn't have said that.
Well, the scary part is when you do start getting the messages back saying recall successfully, you know, or unsuccessfully, it's like, oh crap, you know.
Yeah, right.
And someone's read it, you're like, oh,
you pick up the phone.
Well, yeah, at least at that point you have, you know, like a limited number of people to apologize to.
Well, kind of like don't go to bed mad, you know. Don't hit send when you're mad.
Yeah, yeah. And so you know, I don't know. It doesn't hit me as a thing, but people really want it, so
yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Kind of like reply and forward indicators.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Those are really useful. Those are incredibly useful.